Welcome to the Atlantic Group podcast. Our seventh tradition states, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting declining outside contributions. Your contribution covers the expenses of this podcast and also that of our AA service structure. If you're an AA member who finds this podcast helpful, you can contribute using Venmo at AG Tradition 7, the at sign, and then AG Tradition, the number 7, all one word. Or you can use Zelle under agnycinfo@gmail.com. In the note, what's it for? Please write AG Podcast. Thank you for your support.
The format of this meeting is two 10-minute speakers followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Ronnie.
Hi, my name is Ronnie, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. It's a pleasure to be here tonight. This is like the cathedral of alcoholism. The first time I came in here to the Atlantic Group, I was amazed at how many people were here getting sober, being sober, helping others to become sober. I just can't, I can't believe that today I get the opportunity to speak here too. My sobriety date is February 1st of 2023, puts me at about 2.5 years sober. My home group is Sobriety on the Square. I have a sponsor. He knows he's my sponsor. We do the steps, you know, all that good stuff. I had sponsees. Not the easiest thing to keep a sponsee, you know. I'm open to do the work, and my experiences in sponsoring other men has definitely shown me what a miracle it is that I get to stay here a day at a time. The alternative that's always an option. get into it for a sec. My first drink was at the first time I got properly drunk. I was 11 years old, and I knew that I had stumbled onto something that I just wanted to keep doing it. At 11, it's kind of hard to continuously drink. If I could have, I would have. Luckily, my parents were alcoholics, and they'd send me to the liquor store with money, and I'd bring back booze, and that's how that worked. So by the time I was 13, 15, 17, I was the guy. You know, I would get the alcohol. That was my job. And by the time I was 17, I started to have consequences, landed in jail for the very first time. Couldn't live at home anymore. The relationship with my family was severed. But for me, alcohol was still a solution, not the problem. And it wasn't until I started working in restaurants that I realized that alcohol may be a problem. But by then, I didn't know any other way to live. My life was reduced to working at 5, getting out at 12, 1 in the morning, going to the bar till 4, going to after hours till 8, 9, 10 in the morning, sleeping off whatever I could and starting over again. And I knew life was unsustainable and I needed a solution. So I went to college. I didn't drink for a couple of years, but when I finally picked up the bottle again, you know, I was off to the races. And very quickly, I found my life getting more unmanageable. I was filling out financial aid forms drunk. And, I made an error. I corrected the error, but that triggered a verification process. And the thing about me, when I have alcoholism. And when I'm drinking, I don't have the wherewithal to get the stamp, to put it in the envelope, to write an address on it and put it in a mailbox. I just can't do those things. And so I ended up losing my financial aid, and I couldn't graduate. And, you know, I turned to my friend Jack Daniels, and his idea was to jump off a bridge. But I'm scared of heights. And by the time I got to that bridge, I lost all of the liquid courage. And, you know, I called a friend. And, long story short, he would later tell me that I should become a stockbroker. And, I started applying for jobs on Wall Street, and finally I got one. And I worked for 2 years. I put my head down. I didn't touch the bottle for 2 years. And finally when I did, I had that I had arrived moment at a summer party at the penthouse at the W, and all these things going on. It was the beginning of what was soon to be another solution for me, because shortly thereafter that, I was coming into work 3 days in a row with the same suit. And so, once again, I needed a solution. So I got married. I remember it like it was yesterday. I was walking through a Vegas casino the night before I got married. And I turned to my ex-wife and I said, "Are you sure that you want to marry me tomorrow?" And that woman looked me dead in the eye and said, "Don't worry, we'll fix that. We'll fix your alcoholism." And by the end of that year, she gave me an ultimatum. She said, "Go to AA or we're getting a divorce." I did. I went to Alcoholics Anonymous I went down to the Tribeca Group down at Fulton Street. It's at 7:30 p.m. I went there for 10 days, Monday through Friday for 2 weeks. And by the end of those 2 weeks, I came up with a bright idea. Called my ex-wife and I told her, "Hey, guess what? I did the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can drink normally." And I said, "I'll prove it to you. I'll go across the street and I'll just have one." You know, that one drink cost me everything. I lost a job. I lost a wife. What little relations I did have with my family were completely broken. And I spent a very long time trying to find the right solution, and it wasn't moving across the country, it wasn't moving across the world. And my last run, I was butt naked in Boise, Idaho, at the end of a 5-day bender in a duck pond, and when the police showed up, I thought the only solution I had left was to run at them as fast as I could, and I tried to get them to shoot me. And I closed my eyes, and I knew in my heart of hearts they were going to shoot me. And that didn't happen. I got tased instead. I ran into the police officer that tased me, and I didn't stop running. And I don't know, maybe a mile down the road, I got tased again. Myself, pardon my French. I woke up in jail, and I just remembered, I just thought to myself, this is it, my life is over. And I got charged with felony assault of a police officer. I didn't know how I was going to get out of that jam, but, you know, then another thought occurred to me, and I remembered the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I remembered that you guys were here. I remembered that you guys drank like I did, but now you didn't, and you were happy. I remembered how much we used to laugh in these rooms, and I said, maybe that could work for me. And so when I bailed out, I flew back to New York, and I slept for 3 days, and I ran back, and I ran to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was beaten to the point of submission, and I was willing to do whatever it was that you guys told me to do. So you told me to get a sponsor, and I did. That sponsor taught me a prayer. It was, "God, it's me, Ronnie. I'm an alcoholic. Please help me stay sober today. Speak to me and through me and help me to be of service. And I said that prayer every single day. And then I had this another thought, and it's like, what if I just say this prayer on my knees? And I began, my thought process was, the consequences of there being a God is more significant than me getting on my knees and there not being a God. And what if I just get down on my knees, my life would get better? And I did. And you know what? I don't know if my life is better, but I know that I'm sober today. And some days, it was only that prayer that kept me sober. I've gone through so many things in sobriety. At 6 months of sobriety, I had 2 strokes. A year sober, I had heart surgery. My mother tried to kill herself. She was in a medically induced coma for 3 days. I lost my best friend in sobriety. and to the disease of alcoholism. And I was able to show up, and I was able to stay sober. They told me that's my time, but it really was a pleasure to be here tonight and to speak with you. Thank you for letting me share.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Gina.
Hi, Gina, alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 8th, 2022. This is my home group, and I love it. And it's always a privilege to speak at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, how it was, the condensed version, because I drank for 40 years. I grew up in the city. I grew up with an alcoholic father. There were alcoholics all over my family. You could tell the alcoholics because they were violent and they hurt you emotionally, physically, tornadoes. You moved out of the way. And I was never going to be like that. My dream always as a child was to just be nothing like my family. So drinking started very early. I had my first drink at 5 at a family party, took my grandfather's highball instead of my ginger ale, and drank it all down in one, and then realized I had done that and looked up, thought, uh-oh, and everybody laughed, and then I staggered around and danced, and everybody clapped and thought it was wonderful. So I was like, cool, that's what that's about. So life went on. My mother tired of the beatings and left my father when I was 5. And I didn't see him for many years. I got a new life, a stepfather. I moved. And life was going along. And my mother announced that my dad had reached out and he wanted to be in my life again. And I thought, okay, that's cool. So she said, you're going to start going every weekend to your dad's now that he's sober. Well, not sober. My dad would come and pick me up at private school in his, you know, jalopy of a car, and we'd go out to Far Rockaway to his studio apartment, and he drank and did drugs, and I thought it was really cool. I had these secrets, right? I started having secret lives. And I was doing things nobody knew about. And I remember being in elementary school and thinking that all the adults were so stupid and didn't know anything. And I was being treated like the very sophisticated adult I was. my job, my chores with my dad was every week I would roll his weekly ounce of pot, and he had schooled me on how to do that very well. And I thought this was normal, and my mother knew nothing of anything, and she was very excited about her new life, not paying a lot of attention. And slowly, My father started giving me alcohol and the drugs. And then my dad stopped being my father, and he became my abuser. And this was so horrific, but I was given alcohol by him. And alcohol was this magical elixir, and I fell in love immediately. It took away all pain and all fear, and it made me warm inside. And alcohol became my parent, my best friend, the love of my life. I adored it, and I was so grateful for it. And I was never separated from a drink because nobody was really watching me. And my father was actively supplying me. I just kept drinking, and when I turned 13, my friends were ready to join the party, and I was happy to be the tour guide. I was sneaking into Studio 54 at 13, and my life of insanity began. And I made friends with people who drank like me. When I was 16, I was on a booze cruise run by my favorite bar, and I met my husband, who had arrived from Northern Ireland 2 days before. He drank like me. He was running away from war and an alcoholic father, and it was love at first sight. And our partnership in drinking was wonderful. And I drank every day. But I never thought I was an alcoholic. I was a good person. I was a loving person, right? I loved my friends. I loved my husband. And I never saw it as a problem. I always saw it as the way I wanted to live. It was part of everything. It was included in the way I celebrated, the way I grieved, the way I relaxed, everything. And I was so grateful. I loved it more than anything. And there were consequences, but I didn't see them as such. I saw them as the price of admission, right? Waking up and not knowing where I was, had a gun held to my head, a knife to my throat, you know. I came out unscathed. It was fine. You know, alcohol gave me courage, drank some more. We laughed about it. It was good. So my husband then started to act like an alcoholic. He couldn't hold a job. He started driving my children drunk. First DUI, second DUI, kids in the car, come and get them. He almost killed them. So my husband was from Ireland, and he was no interest in being separated from alcohol. So he went back to Ireland, and I was on my own with my two kids, and I was like, I know, I'm gonna go into the bar business. So I opened a bar, and then I opened another one, and I had a bar and a burlesque nightclub show in Dumbo, and I was insane. And I thought everything was great. I mean, I was barred from the River Club, all the bars in the neighborhood. I was absolutely insane. I would get so drunk, my manager, and I had a system, he'd give me the look, and I knew I was starting to sway, so he'd take me out the back exit, so all my customers and my 28 employees didn't see me being carried to a cab. And one night, that went awry when he let go of me to hail the cab, and I fell backwards, hit my head on the curb, quick, smacked it open like a watermelon. I'm sitting on the curb. Customers, employees, everyone comes out. The building manager comes out, takes my picture. I still have it. Think Carrie after the prom. And they had me. They had me. I woke up and they said I almost died and I knew I had to come in. And had been drinking from 9 to 46. No idea how to live without alcohol. And AA came into my rehab. And they put up the shades. And I was like, shut up. You have step-by-step directions and a book. I'm like, this is it. This is what I need. Because no idea. And it was amazing. I was feeling all these feelings. Colors were brighter. Food tasted good. Now, all the pain that I had been ignoring also came crashing down. But I worked the steps. I found a wonderful sponsor who had what I wanted. And life was getting much, much better. But then we got to step 12. And she was like, okay, now it's your turn to go out and carry the message and to get a sponsee. And I said, that's a terrible idea. No. I was like, you would send me to help somebody, tell somebody else how to get sober? No. And I wouldn't do it. And I just rode on those laurels for almost 3 years. And right before my third anniversary, I was at a party. And somebody had asked me about my childhood sexual abuse, and I was like, good party topic. And I walked into the kitchen and poured a glass of wine, and I was three glasses in before it even dawned on me that I had just thrown away 3 years of sobriety. And up until that point, I had never drank against my will. It was always my will to be with alcohol like this. But I had known sobriety, and I wanted to come back, but I couldn't. And I became the carpet slipper drinker. I drank at home, and I couldn't come back. And I'd go to meetings, and I'd stand outside, and I'd cry, and I wouldn't go in. 4 years, I got a master class in drinking against your will. And I could have lived without it, but maybe not. God needed me to know that lesson. Meanwhile, my husband is in Ireland doing the Leaving Las Vegas Ireland version. He's died twice and been revived, and now he's in end-stage organ failure. And my children are watching him die and have to say goodbye at his bedside. And that brought me back. It was Brian's last gift to me, my husband's last gift. His dying and my seeing my children look at me and wondering when I was gonna die brought me back in. And you were waiting for me with open arms. And now the 12 step is the backbone of my program. And I am so grateful for AA and for all of you. Thank you for my sobriety.
Our main speaker tonight is Ed.
How you doing, everybody? Eddie Alcoholic. So I don't think I've ever been in my years of coming around to the program of AA, I've ever been in a meeting this big. I've never been to something in this, like I said, this large. This is great. I mean, this is exactly me personally. I like when I see these many people in recovery. It's vibrant. A lot of people getting sober. They're trying to change their life, which is, for me, that's a great thing. I have earned my seat to be here in AA without question. I listened to the previous two speakers speak. And, you know, I appreciate your message. I identify with a lot of what you had to say. And drinking in trouble. You know, I started drinking at a very young age. And it was probably from 10 or 11 years old, something like that, that I got intoxicated. I got inebriated at 11 years old. Now, I have two children, and my son is a little older, and my daughter is senior in high school, but I remember when they were 11 and they were 12, and I look at them, and I see myself what I was doing when I was their age, and it was absolutely insane. You know, as far back as I can remember, I come from a very good family. My parents are still married today. They live down in LBI. And they're married 59 years, something like that. They're still together. Alcoholism, though. Both sides of the family, my mother's German, my father's Irish, second generation. And what I distinctively remember way back then as a little boy is the booze was everywhere. Big families they came from, my mother from a family of 8, my father from a family of 7. And everybody drank. And it was cultural, for sure. You know, I have a sister who passed away from another disease that took her out. And I have two brothers who are still alive, and one of them belongs sitting right into that chair next to me. But he is not here. So the cousins and everything else growing up, a lot of drinking, exposed to it. I don't know. I mean, I don't think, you know, I'm not going to stand up here and kill my parents because they did the best they could. It was the atmosphere that they were brought into, I guess. I met my one grandmother, and God rest her soul, and my grandfather, but he was one of us. Little did I know that he was off the booze for many years, but he got physical, from what I was told. He got physical with his daughters, and he got physical with his sons. So, point is, as I stand up here, it's all over the place. It's genetic. It's in me. I have it. And so, I need to be here. So, good neighborhood in the Bronx. 16 years. And like I mentioned, I took the drink at such a young age. And what I could tell you is that with that experience was, I wanted to do it again. I definitely wanted to do it again. I was restless, irritable, and discontent. I wasn't happy with me. Insecurity and fear. And I remember that distinctively feeling those feelings. And there was really no reason to. But fact of the matter is, that's the way I was. I found that first drink. I wanted to do it again. And I proceeded to do it again, drink that way, up until I came into the rooms. 22 years later, I came into the rooms. So as I got older, neighborhood kids, I gravitated towards the wrong crowd, of course. And Irish kids in the neighborhood I was from, Woodlawn section, Norwood section of the Bronx, stickball, wiffle ball, all the city games we played, but there was always booze. There was always alcohol, and we got it, and I drank it, and, you know, that's just the way we live life. I really didn't get into too much trouble, but what I can tell you is that at that age, as I proceeded, as I grew, and I proceeded through life, I probably should have been 12-stepped, mid-teens, late teens, 17, 18 years old, without question, because then, I know this now, I see it now, that I was a fall-down, pee-in-your-pants drunk at that age. And nobody ever said anything. There were some comments thrown in my direction, but nobody really sat me down and said, kid, listen to me. You cannot touch this stuff. You have to stay away from it. Now, whether I would have listened or not is a whole other story. Probably not. I'm standing here. But that did not happen. Very fortunate throughout the years, little trouble here and there as I got older. Everything felt, we hear it all the time. I mean, in the rooms. Everything that interested me fell by the wayside. It just was put to the side in favor of the drink. That's all I wanted to do. I just didn't think at that age, mid-teens, late teens, really life was worth living if you couldn't drink, if you couldn't have a drink. Why do anything? And that's where my head, my thinking was locked into that at that age. So I was full-blown then. My sisters and brothers, nobody really sort of stepped up to me. My father didn't, certainly. My mother didn't say anything. She did what she was, what I saw. She did what she was told. Things were different back then, I didn't get involved. I was a problem for sure. I was defiant to the extreme. I have the characteristics that we all read about in our literature. So nobody really said anything to me. Nothing really major trouble-wise happened to me. And I was fortunate for that. A lot of close calls, but fortunate for that to happen. But there are, you know, there are two incidents that took place that exposed me to recovery, exposed me to AA. The first one, it was, so as I got through late teens, I got into 20, early 20s, 21, I was out of control. I was living life the way I wanted to live. I could get out of my way, selfish, self-centered to the extreme. And so a series of events, one particular event that's, you know, so that's kind of what it was like for me. All fun, little bit of fun. I don't know about all fun, some fun. And then at the end, it was maintenance. There was no fun at all. And this was early 20s, mid-20s. So the incident is, you know, a couple of them. First incident that exposed me to recovery, 12-step program, was it was a car accident. And no, actually, that's the second incident. The first incident was I was in a bar. I was in the Raccoon Lodge on 83rd Street and Amsterdam Avenue. It's closed down now. I had nothing to do with closing it down. But so I went down a flight of stairs in there. It was after work. I drank like I was going to the electric chair. For some reason, it was a tough day, and my tools for dealing with stressful, tough days was getting blitzed. And I just want to bring up a point. People say, you know, they picked up the first drink, they didn't know where they were going to be. True, my experience. But that's where I wanted to go. That's worse, in my opinion, me. I wanted to get to that point where everything went dark. So this incident, I'm in the Raccoon Lodge doing shots upon shots upon shots. And I remember the bartender saying, this is back in 1998, 97. I remember her saying, you know, what are you doing? And she kept lining them up. And next thing you know, I go down the stairs, I end up in St. Luke's Hospital. And I don't know how I got there, but what I was told, I sort of kind of vaguely remember what happened a little bit. I went crazy. I went absolutely crazy. I took the orderlies, I took staff, they strapped me down. I was in the ER, I went nuts. I was busted wide open from going down the steps. I still have the scars today. And next, this is what I was told. I kind of vaguely remember. Police involved, the whole thing. So I get up the next day. I didn't know where I was. I had a gown on. I had a headache. I was all stitched up. The nose was broken, the whole thing. So you can go. But before you go, the doctor wants to talk to you. Okay. So I go to the doctor. I sit down. My ears are ringing. My head is slamming. And he says to me, he goes over my discharge papers, and he says, you have a drinking problem for somebody your age. I was 28 at the time. Because you have a drinking problem. You need help. And I looked right at him, and I said, okay. It didn't register. Watched his, like Charlie Brown, I watched his mouth move without hearing what he had to say. And then, on top of that, he don't know what he's talking about. I got it under control. So I leave. They sign me out. I leave. I go out. I go back home. I sleep it off. I'll stop. I'll slow down. I never thought that you can't. I couldn't. I always thought I could if I wanted to. So I'll slow down. No more shots. I'll stay away from the whiskey. I won't do shots of Jägermeister. I'll drink beer. I'll drink light beer. Bud Light. Okay. So literally, it was right around the holidays of 1998. And I just started a new position at work. I had to go out for medical treatment. I go back. I'm all bandaged up. I'm still hanging tough without going to AA. Inevitably, what happens? No program, no reaching out. Although back up a little bit. I did a friend of mine. This is my first exposure. Woodlawn up in the Bronx meets me. I know him through the years. I knew he didn't drink, but I didn't know what the deal was with him. So takes me to Woodlawn meeting, Footprints, St. Barnabas Church, right off of McLean Avenue, if you're ever up there. Still going to this day. Walk in, it's a big meeting, not as big as this. We're going around the room. I'm standing there, I got the bandage. They're coming, everybody's identifying themselves, and I'm watching them go around the room. I'm standing where I'm at. I'm like, they're gonna come to me. And lo and behold, they made it to me. And I did one of these. I stepped back, they went past, and they continued on. I went downstairs and I left. And I said, this ain't for me. I go out for another year, incident that landed me in AA. I'm at a function. We're playing cards. Next thing you know, I wake up. I'm in Jacoby Hospital. So I covered two hospitals, one in each borough. So I end up in Jacoby in the Bronx. And I wrecked my car. I hit an L pillar, White Plains Road and Gun Hill Road. Why I was over there at 3:00 in the morning, I kind of have an idea, but that's for another day. So I wind up in Jacoby. I got no car. It was the same thing. You know, this time I was driving. They wanted me, the nurses wanted me arrested. That did not happen. Somebody intervened. It was a counselor. And next thing you know, I get home. They discharge me. I'll drink. I won't drink this way anymore. Next thing you know, I am 12-stepped. I'm 12-step. And I'm being told I'm going to an inpatient treatment for a month up in Walton, New York. And I said, defiant to the end, I am not an alcoholic. Yes, you are. No, I'm not. Yes, you are. No, I'm not. Back and forth, back and forth. Well, you can do it this way, or you can do it your way, and now there'll be ramifications if you do it your way. And so right there, the jig was up. I was cornered. For the first time in my life, I was 29 years old. I was confronted head on with my drunken stupidity. And my bell was rung. So they said, they give me a questionnaire, fill it out. It was like 50 questions to people who I was dealing with at the time. I fill it out and they pulled it away. I wasn't even halfway done. They're like, you're going. They knew what my blood alcohol content was at the time. It was very high. And I went. So I'm in a rehab up in Walton called New Direction. It's run by Matt and Margaret. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me. Now, I've had lots of gifts in recovery, but that and the gift of sobriety was given to me, and I didn't even deserve it. You know, it was dropped in my lap, and in the beginning, I fought it, but then senses prevailed. And I was in this rehab, and they walked you through the first three steps. I was in there with 18 people. My head was spinning. It was the first time since 11 years old. Before that, I was away from the drink. Like, you know, it was like, there was no more, that's it, done. So I was mocus at first, you know, considering I'm there. So it turns out that they walk you through the first three steps, right? Powerless over alcohol, unmanageability. Powerless over alcohol, unmanageability. two parts. So powerless over alcohol. No, not powerless over anything. Unmanageability, my life was manageable. I was paying a Con Ed bill. I was paying the mortgage. I was paying the bills, and in reality was I was not. I was not. It was late. The Con Ed bill was threatening to shut my lights off. The cable wasn't getting paid. So that's the reality. So step two, power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. I'm in the rehab. That's greater than me, and it's trying to get me to look at my alcoholism. And then the third step, I remember that turning my will and my life over to AA. So those three in the rehab. So I get out. They discharge you after a month. I was up there for Thanksgiving, by the way, and I had to make up all kinds of excuses why I couldn't. You know, I was single at the time. I wasn't married. You know, I had an opportunity to go away and get squared away. And I was very fortunate the way things fell in line for me. But anyway, so I get discharged. I go home. Before you leave, they give you a big book. Everybody signs it. That's there. And they give you a meeting list, the old books. And then, good luck, off you go. So I left, and they drive you home, I'm home. So now they make suggestions. You have to, you should, but I needed you have to. Not can you, if it feels good. I needed the discipline, I needed the structure, I know that now. That's what happened. I hooked up with a guy. And when I was home, I walked in. I had a co-op at the time, and the refrigerator was loaded with beer. Loaded. And there was nobody home. This is me. I dumped everything down the drain. I said, I'm going to give this a shot. I have to. But just the lingering fear of ramification was still hovering over my head. I had obligations I had to do. To stay, you know, sobriety, to appease an overhead. I'll just leave it at that. And I did. So that helped. But then inevitably, you cut loose completely. So I was going to meetings. And like I said in the beginning, you know, I got rid of the beer. The phone was ringing off the hook. You know, my family, my parents, nobody really... Now that I think about it, nobody really, they didn't know where I was. To this day, they didn't know where I was. I don't know. So nobody really, friends called, barroom friends called over and over. So I returned some of them. Just have wine. Can you have wine? Meet me here, meet me there, meet me at the Garden Tavern, meet me at the Quarter Moon Saloon, meet me, blah, blah, blah. Just have wine. Nah, I can't go. So that experience where I had to change my life, and it had to start small, because I was single at the time. I had a girlfriend at the time, and she wasn't one of us, but she was... You know, she was a hostage. I'll just leave it at that. I'm not proud of that today. But so a lot of decisions had to be made, right? Do you want to get sober, stop drinking, and change the trajectory of your life? Or do you want to go back to that life you were living, and which is no good, really no good? And I picked... the former. I wanted to stay sober. But the fact is, I just did not know how. I was afraid. I talked about that insecurity, the fear and insecurity that I had as a little boy, all the way up through teenage, into the early 20s. Restless, irritable, and discontent. Fearful and insecure. So I did not know how to stop. So that's where the sponsor comes in. And the group comes in. And man, a lot of sacrifice. And I say that, I stress that when I speak, is because when you first come in, for me, everybody's different. My experience, it didn't fall in my life. Like, it wasn't easy for me. I had to make the sacrifice. A lot of crying, a lot of remorse and guilt, what I did to people throughout my life, my behavior towards my siblings, my parents, my cousins, my girlfriends, my employer, all the stuff. But you work through it. And a lot of times there in the beginning, the first several years, I wanted to drink. I missed the bar life. I made some mistakes in the beginning. I went to where it was suggested, don't go. And I went anyway. Don't touch that burning stove. Ow! I touched it. I went and I paid. I didn't drink, but man, that was brutal. So that's kind of what happened to me. Where am I today? Today I'm here right now where my feet are standing in this meeting. I try to get always. I got a lot of bells and whistles that came with sobriety. Sobriety will produce, if you give it, if you apply and you're enthusiastic about recovery and you deal with stuff you're going to have to deal with, let's be real. I stopped growing when I picked up that first drink. When I stopped at 29, now, you know, I'm an 8-year-old trapped inside a 29-year-old body, right? So now you got to grow up, and it was a lot of pain there, a lot of crying, a lot of depression. I didn't want to leave the house. I didn't want to get out of bed. But anyway, so you work through that. So now where I am today is I'm here. I was asked to speak here and by a friend of mine who's friends with Dick, and he asked me to come up here, down here, I'm in Katona, down here, and speak. And I said, okay, because now I'm here, what do I do now? I try to give back as much as I can because I know moving forward after today, tomorrow, there's a good chance I'm not going to drink because I'm going to remember tonight. And that's how it works. I'm walking a sponsee through the steps. We're going through the first 164 pages. We are just started how it works. And he'll have 9 months. He's 62 years old. He's never had 9 months in his life, and he started drinking at 12. Think about that. So I'm trying to walk him through, but I give it to him like how it was given to me, and I hope he buys in. And, but you have to, and I tell him, and I tell guys I try to help out, you know, it is a program of action. And I tell them, I said, you know, that you have to, you have to, because your way is where you're at now. You're in a halfway house. Your way got you there. So just, we'll read together, ask questions, and he's been great. But at the same time, not to be selfish, is that I'm getting it again. So we are at how it works, being convinced we are at step 3. And it talks about the first chunk of the first 164 pages is dedicated to the first and second step. Because those two steps, especially one, is critical. And I, like it was explained to me, when I, powerless over alcohol, life was unmanageable. Like, I had to really, it took me a while to get past that. But I knew, like I said, I knew my life was unmanageable. I knew. But I wanted to be in that place where complete annihilation. So that right there. So, you know, the first section of the book, unmanageability, powerlessness, and then the second step is power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. And I tell guys I help who are just coming in, we'll focus on step one. We'll read everything about first chunk of the first 164 pages. We'll address one and two. We'll talk about the doctor's opinion for step one. And so far, so good. But you know, program of action. So right now, I am. I appreciate the previous two speakers. I appreciate being asked to speak here, and thank you.